My goodness. All right. Every week, 10 minutes with Tolly Don Tollison, the legendary broadcaster from Philadelphia. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline right now. Tolly, what's up, man? We're talking about what irks you in Philadelphia. You're such a positive guy. Does anything irk you right now?
Yeah, there's one thing, and there are different ways. I loved it when you played the soundbite from the awesome McGinnis about irritating, you know, and it irritates you, irks you, or really, really bothers you. And this is with a million great positives about Philly fans, in particular their passion, pride in this city, the way they support their teams and all. The use of the word hate, especially with the Dallas Cowboys. I hate the Dallas Cowboys. I hate the Dallas Cowboys. And when I see like little kids saying that, and it's just such a terrible word because it represents the most insidious social cancer in the history of mankind. And I just wish we would say, I really, really, really dislike, or I root for the Eagles and whoever's playing the Cowboys. But
good point.
It just bothers me. And it's not obviously limited to Philadelphia fans, but that I hate the Cowboys. And the day that they booed Michael Irvin, who wasn't one of my favorite players in the NFL, and I really, really, really vehemently dislike the Cowboys, but he's lying on the ground at the vet and people are cheering. I mean, those kind of moments really don't do a lot for our image around the country. But hey, on a much more positive note, not wearing a goaltender mask, a goalie without a mask. And I love the name Gump Worsley.
Yeah, remember him?
The Gumper. And those guys, I just had four teeth extracted at the great Temple University Dental School. I have a great, great student dentist there, Dr. Ivy Dow. And I was just thinking about hockey guys. Hey, four teeth. What are you kidding me? I had 14 knocked out in this game, you know, when they didn't wear masks and they didn't wear helmets. But one of the reasons, as I sit here in the Lehigh Valley hoping that it clears up so that we can have driveway basketball at Heidi's this afternoon with Gabby posting up Dominic, who is one of Heidi's grade four kids and all. But I am so excited. Really excited about the Alex Smith news today that the Washington football team has announced he has come off the PUP list, physically unable to perform. And at 36, after 17 surgeries on that leg that was crushed against the Houston Texans back in November of 2018, he had 17 surgeries.
That's unbelievable.
He broke his tibia. He shattered his tibia and his fibula. They thought he might lose his life due to infection.
Right.
And ESPN did this incredible documentary that every football fan should look at and find online. And his wife, Liz, visited him in the hospital, and the doctors had to tell her, you know, we don't know if he's going to survive tonight or tomorrow and all. And now this guy, you talk about courage, and you know I don't like to use that word when the real courage is with the men and women of the military and first responders, especially police officers. It is just, this is courageous. But also, it's so inspiring. You know, to me, as we've discussed many times, Joe, the greatest thing sports can do for our country is unite us in terms of civil rights and everything that is against hatred. And sports helps with that so much. But it can also inspire us with stories like Alex Smith. And when they said, you know, you may lose the leg, you may lose your life, in that documentary, he starts just making 5-yard underhand tosses with his beautiful children. And there's a great piece of video of the family when it was announced he was coming off the PUP list yesterday. They're spraying him on the driveway
with champagne. Yeah.
You know, and Alex Smith is a great human being, and that's much more important, a great husband and father, than being a great football player. But remember, he had a pretty good career before that injury, and had it not been for Colin Kaepernick, what an irony this is. He gets replaced by Colin Kaepernick, so he goes to the Chiefs, He gets replaced by Patrick Mahomes. And now he's going to be in the competition in Washington. And Ron Rivera said, you know, publicly they were saying, yeah, we think, you know, he has a chance to actually be able to play. But privately, people are saying that, you know, most of the people in the organization were like, I don't know. And they had him practice off to the side. But on Tuesday, he'll be a full participant in workouts and all. And I have to tell you, we've discussed the last couple of weeks our mixed feelings about the return of football, the danger in particular of the heart issues that are connected to COVID with the myocardial disease that can be directly attributed to getting COVID. And I have very mixed feelings about college football coming back. But I got to tell you, as a guy like you and your great producer, Nat, I love football. And when I saw highlights from Utah, they started playing high school football on Friday night in Utah. And in a little town called Harriman, Utah, they did it the right way. Every player had his own water bottle. The fans had assigned seats and were socially distanced. And in the highlights I saw, they were all wearing their masks. And in a great game with one of the greatest nicknames of all time, the Davis Darts beat the Harriman Mustangs 24-20. And of course, Alex Smith played his college ball at Utah and was the number one pick. But I'm getting goosebumps talking about him right now because he is just an example of you never give up. You never give up. And that's another thing sports, that's the kind of inspiration sports can teach us. And just real quickly before we chat for a minute or two about other things, it's very fortunate that the injury occurred in Houston because Philadelphia, Boston, Houston, the San Francisco Bay Area, these are great medical communities. And he was so fortunate that he could be initially treated in Houston. And he's a very patriotic American like you and I are and so many others that we agree with about this being the greatest nation in the history of civilization. I think most, if not possibly all of those 17 surgeries were done in military hospitals. I guess he personally and the Washington Football Organization got a dispensation from the Defense Department, and doctors in the military hospitals who have worked on young people like my heroic friend Tim Donnelly, who Lance Corporal in the Marines, who lost both legs to an IED. You know, they have such expertise in rebuilding, in particular, soldiers' legs. And they did most of the surgeries, again, if not all. And so everything fell in place. But none of this happens without, number one, the integrity, courage, and character of Alex. And then the family love, and there's nothing greater than family love, as you know with your beautiful family, and I know with Heidi and my family. Nothing can be greater than the family love and support that got Alex Smith to where he'll put on number 11 and the red, you know, safety vest and all, and get out there and practice on Tuesday. What a great, great thing that all of us can be really, really inspired by.
Tremendous story. Let's stay positive, Tolly. Last question for you. The Flyers, they're really the only bright spot right now going on in Philadelphia. We'll see what the Eagles have in store for us this season. Yeah. But bad game the other day, you know, kind of a wake-up call, 5-0 loss to the Canadiens. How do they bounce back from that?
Well, I think they bounce back with what I expect to be a great effort tonight. And I think the key to it, and I have great confidence about this, is that Carter Hart, like all great goaltenders, even though he's a very young, short career so far, they have to have the closer mentality. And I like to use that baseball analogy because you give up a walk-off grand slam, and then the next day you come into a ninth-inning situation, bases loaded, one out. You got to forget about what happened yesterday. And I think Carter Hart is going to come out, and he's got to get better support. That was just, you talk about group participation and playing poorly. You know, everybody almost was involved there. But I don't think Carter Hart is going to really, really let that factor in tonight. He'll have the closer mentalities, and he's got coaches, not just head coach Vigneault, but he's got coaches behind the bench – who are going to make that happen. They're going to facilitate. This is a 0-0 game. Let's just play like we did in game one.
Well, let's hope so, Tolly, because the Canadians are gaining momentum. They're coming out of nowhere. Yeah. They're one of those teams, it looks like, that might make some noise. We shall see. But the Flyers are certainly one of the top teams in the league. We'll try to prevent that. We appreciate you coming on, man. Great stuff on Alex Smith, and we'll catch up with you next week. Tell the family I said hello.
Great job, and congratulate your producer, Nat, because you got a great show going today. I love your topic of the day. But let's just try to vehemently dislike the Cowboys and today the Canadians and eliminate the word hate from our vocabularies, okay?
Done, Tolly. Appreciate it, pal.
See you later, Joe.
All right, take care. Don Tolleson, the legendary Don Tolleson on 97.5, the Fanatic 10 Minutes with Tolly. That is a great story about Alex Smith. He led the Utah Utes to an undefeated season his last year there under Urban Meyer. Talk about a great coach. Urban Meyer wins everywhere. You know, you have to wonder why some guys are just so much better than the pack. Everywhere he goes, Urban Meyer undefeated at Utah. He wins two championships with Florida. He wins a championship with Ohio State. That's amazing. Okay, Nick Saban, yeah, one of the great coaches of all time. I put Urban Meyer up there. I put my money on Urban Meyer. Maybe over Nick Saban. He's, again, he wins everywhere. Not only wins and is somewhat successful or productive, but he wins championships. In Utah, if they were, you know, in a, you know, a big name conference that year, they would have, I think they were 11-0. They won their bowl game 12-0. But again, not everyone. It was back in the day too with the BCS. So it's not like the 4-team playoff format that they have today, which I think will expand at some point. If they can make more money off it, it will expand. It's working so far. It's not bad. There's still a lot of, you know, bickering and arguments about, you know, the 5th team, they should have gotten in. The 6th team, they should have gotten in. I think it will expand at some point. But thank God they went to a playoff system. I thought that was never going to happen. And the BCS, yeah, I hated that. But, you know, I guess it's a lot better than back in the day when you had the UPI folks and AP voting. You had AP and UPI voting who was the national champion. Instead of playing it on the field like every other sport, you got voted in. And you know, most of the times they got it right, and you kind of knew who was the champion because maybe one played two in the Sugar Bowl or something, so it's a no-brainer, but you know, there were times where there was, you know, you didn't know who was going to be voted number one the next day. It's crazy how that has evolved. And now they actually play for a championship on the field. And we're going to talk to Steve Callis about college football and what's going on with that. Oklahoma just announced Lincoln Riley that I think 9 players have tested positive for COVID-19. You know, again, I think it's a bad idea playing football this year, but what can I say? It's all about the money. All right, another break. Steve Cowell's coming up at 10:30. I'm Joe Stasek. What irks you about Philadelphia sports, and how do you like the Flyers' chances tonight against Le Canadien? 610-632-0975. Joe Stasek here till noon.
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5, The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back. 10:28 here at 97.5. The Fanatic. Miserable day out. Just a rain fest, but happy that you're tuning in. And we're talking Philly sports. What irks you? You can chime in and we can talk positive about the Flyers. Other than that, what's positive to talk about right now? The Sixers are a mess. I don't think they're getting out of the first round. Phillies, it's just not a good club. We talked about their bullpen, how horrendous it is. Maybe Matt Klintak has to go. I haven't been on that bandwagon. I like to give guys a legitimate shot. You know, he did bring JT Realmuto here. They got Bryce Harper signed, or maybe that was John Middleton. You got to sign JT Realmuto. Like yesterday. That was one of the things I started the show with, what irks me. Two things. The Sixers, and again, there's like, within the Sixers, there's like nine things in there that irk me, and they need to straighten it out. But, you know, overall, what really irks me about the Sixers is, you know, I thought the process would work. I really did. I loved it. It was rough, yes. 5 years of dreck, but, you know, before that, you had to go back to 83. For a championship team. So I didn't care. I didn't care about coming in, you know, ninth in the Eastern Conference or seventh and getting bounced in the first round and getting a mediocre pick. I loved the idea. Adam Silver didn't. And right before Sam Hinkie could see his plan through, kind of strong-armed the Sixers, which I didn't like. Yeah, that was a mess, too. The whole Brian Colangelo thing with his wife and the burner phones. You know, then he picks Markelle Fultz. Disaster. Joel Embiid is always hurt. Ben Simmons won't shoot. They had to give max money to a good player, not a great player, and Tobias Harris. The coach has to go. You know, attitude reflects leadership, and it's a too laissez-faire attitude on the 76ers. You know what also irks me? I do a lot of work before I come here to do my shows. I worked last night late, tried to get some sleep, which never happens. And especially when I have to get up early, I'm afraid I'm going to sleep through. I don't know why I do that. I get like 2 hours of sleep a night. But I like to prep, and I put a lot of notes together, and I always have like an outline and thoughts and ideas and maybe some side questions. The most important thing I need to do to get ready for a show is to bring my reading glasses with me. It's only happened one other time that I forgot them, and it was not good. Well, I get to the station, and I usually have them hanging around my neck. I just forgot them. So there's happened to be a pair in the production center on the next to the chalkboard. They're broken. I have one arm on it, and it doesn't help. So I'm like, you know, squinting, trying to see standings. I can't see my notes. I have to look really hard to see names of the callers. But we're getting through it. We're having fun today. Again, what irks you about Philadelphia sports? He's now on the Comcast Business Hotline. He's my podcast partner. He is the sports editor of WestchesterCountyPost.com, also has a Facebook forum page. Speaking of sports, with the great Steve Callis. What's up, Steven?
It's all good, Joe, but if I were you, I'd be like me. You lose your glasses so many times, you just wind up wearing them all the time, even when you don't need them.
I you know, I do that. I fall asleep in them. I watch TV with them just so I know where they are.
Hey, you'll never lose them, guaranteed.
Well, I'd like to think that, but I go through about three pairs a month. You know, they're only readers. They're not like, you know, real expensive ones, but they do add up. You know what? I'm looking across the studio now, and I see a pair. I'm going to go get them next break. I'm going to see if they work for me. But, you know, how you doing, my friend? We're talking about, you know, kind of what irks you in Philadelphia sports and the Phillies. Their bullpen's horrendous. But the JT Realmuto thing, I still can't get my brain around. I think if he gets the free agency, he's gone. And now he's having a ridiculous year. So Matt Klintak's idea of maybe saving money is going to come back and bite him in the rear end. How big of a mistake was it not to sign him?
It's a gigantic mistake, even before he went on this hot streak. But as you know, he's getting richer every day. I think he's tied for the NL lead in homers and RBIs, and it's only 60 games, you know, so he can't fall that far. Barring injury, this guy's going to be incredibly rich. And, yeah, I think it's a gigantic mistake. I mean, he's the best catcher in baseball, very athletic, as you know. And, you know, it's going to be the biggest blunder. And if they do sign him now, and they still should, they're going to pay, you know, $10-20 million more than they would have paid if they had signed him when he wanted to get signed.
Yep. Tried to save some money, and he comes
mind-boggling.
Out, he comes out swinging. That's unbelievable. All right. Big one tonight. If you want to talk about positive things going on in Philadelphia, the Flyers in the postseason, just to have a playoff series to watch, it's great. I love postseason hockey. The series is tied at one. Flyers need a bounce-back game today. Again, I talked about since January 8th, I think, since March 12th, they're 19-6-1 after a loss, something like that. And they're 8-0-0 after their last eight losses. They bounce back nicely, usually. They're well-coached. We're going to find out a lot about Carter Hart today, but we might find out something about the Canadiens, too. What are your thoughts on the Habs?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I read a few articles from Montreal papers because there's kind of a different side of it up there. And some people think that this Kirk Muller replacing Claude Julien is a positive. Kirk Muller, who was famous, frankly, for being the number two pick after Mario Lemieux. He played in the league for 19 years.
Yeah, he did.
Won a cup with the Canadiens in 93. Interesting guy. Coached the Hurricanes, was assistant with the Blues, been with Montreal for 4 or 5 years now, and he walked right in, and the biggest change he made was he put Max Domi on the third line. Now, Max Domi, as you probably know, is Ty Domi's
yes.
kid.
Uh-huh.
And he's a fascinating, he even has kind of a Philly connection, believe it or not, because at 12, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And Bobby Clark not only became one of his heroes, he went and met Bobby Clark, who you know has played with type 1
sure.
diabetes.
Yeah.
And this isn't type 2. Type 1 is a lot more serious, as you know. And he said, meeting Bobby Clark changed my life. I always wanted to be in the league. His father, of course, Ty Domi, was, you know, famous for being a fighter.
Yeah,
that's not Max Domi. But Muller puts him on the third line. He gets 3 assists in that game, too. People think he's made a few minor changes in addition to that that's really helped the Canadians. Claude Julien, I didn't know, actually had a heart procedure. He's not going to be around for at least this series. And people kind of think, so when Kotkaniemi scores 2 goals, it's on passes from Max Domi. And people in Montreal think that's kind of changed the look of the Canadians. And if true, that's a problem for the Flyers that you don't really think about, that they'd actually change the coach and it might be a positive. Not that they weren't trying to win one for the coach, because they were, that's natural, but it's almost like something separate from on the ice is taking over. And apparently, at least in Montreal, they think moving Domi up to the third line from kind of the checking line. He was the third highest goal scorer. He only had 17, but he was third highest on the team again. As I think, was Marcus talking about it yesterday when you talked about they
yes.
can't really score that well
yes.
and you have to outscore them? That's true. But Tatar had 22 goals this year and he had 2 goals the other night. I don't know if this changes them around, but on the back end, they've got the best goalie or arguably the best goalie in the NHL. And on the Flyers side, as we said yesterday, this is the biggest game of Hart's young career because you have to see that he can come back and the Flyers can come back from a 5-0 beatdown and be competitive and hopefully win, because if they lose the next game, if they lose tonight, that's a big problem.
It is a big problem. I always liked Kirk Muller as a player. I dealt with him a lot when he was with the Devils. Good guy. I don't think he meant anything by putting the power play line out the top unit late in the game the other day.
Right.
He even said, I just needed to, you know, get them, keep them sharp, give them some work. You know, he gave the right soundbite, and
correct.
You know, we'll see what happens with that. But he did a nice job in game two. That series tied at a game apiece. Now, I mentioned it came out today that Oklahoma coach Lincoln Riley announced 9 of his players have COVID-19. You know, Clemson had 37. Alabama came down with it. LSU.
Yeah.
They're looking to play college football this year. Who was on? Tolley mentioned there's high school football going on in Utah. Should they play football this year?
Well, I don't think they should play it now. You know, we always go back to this, which you and I talked about in March and April, when there was literally in the United States 1,800, 2,000 people a day dying, mostly in the Northeast. How could we really think about it? And then it kind of came down a little, but didn't come down all the way. And now we have over 1,000 people a day dying every day in the country. And it's not the Northeast. If anything, the Northeast is the best place to be in the country, which is kind of weird given from where we were, you know, in March and April. So that's maybe something outside the actual playing, but as we're seeing now, you just ran off all the teams. These are Petri dishes. You got, what, 60, 70, 80, 90 guys around? And if one guy gets it, it's not going to stop at one. It's going to be 9. It's going to be 37 at Clemson. It's going to be 23 at LSU or Alabama. They were both in the 20s. So I don't really think I'm not against moving it to March, you know, which a lot of the conferences, not the SEC, of course, but a lot of the conferences, including the Big Ten and the Pac-12, that means something. I understand they're not the top of the Power Five, but they're two of the Power Five. And I think this attitude is just a problem because it's not like you can see the storm clouds forming in the distance and take cover, Joe.
Right.
This thing is around you. And you don't know where it is. And once it's there, the other thing I'd be concerned about, how much testing are they really doing? I'd even take it down to high school. No high school can afford to test. How can you play high school football? I understand they played it in Utah, and maybe it's okay. We won't know for 2 weeks. You know, you play a game today. We don't know for 5 to 14 days whether anybody got infected. So I think given what's going on in the whole country, over 1,000 dead people every day for 3 weeks now, coupled with the fact that it's kind of too late if you don't test. Even the colleges aren't testing every day. I think the colleges are testing 2 or 3 times a week, depending on the college. I read about a high school coach up in Connecticut. You know, they said in Connecticut they were going to start playing in 2 weeks. And then now they've taken 1 week to revise and think about that decision. Even though the infection rate, whatever, is very low up in Connecticut. Because once again, what I read was a Connecticut coach saying, we have no money to test. Nobody has any money to test. I heard you need $500,000 to test at the college level, and that's only 2 or 3 days a week. And again, you're not dealing with 12 guys on a basketball team. You're dealing with 40, 50, 60, 70 guys, depending on the high school or the college. So I think it's a big problem. I think it should all be put off to March and try and save the season in March. I don't know that they'll be able to. If you believe all this, here comes the flu, here comes the winter. You know, we still don't have mass testing in the country, so we're not going to get a grasp on this. And for whatever reason, you know, this is a debate for another time, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people don't want to wear masks. And it just makes no sense to me because it's the easiest thing we could do as a country to get the infection rate down in the country. And that's what's happened in Europe. That hasn't happened. That's what's happened in Asia. That hasn't happened in the United States, which to me is inexplicable.
Yeah, it's so easy to wear a mask. I don't get why some people refuse to do it. But we have Steve Callis on the Comcast Business Hotline. Steve, I don't know how we even got on the subject of guys, hockey players not wearing helmets and goaltenders not wearing masks, but I thought of you.
Stuff.
I thought of you when the subject came up because I know you're an old school hockey guy and you were around when they weren't wearing masks and you know some stuff about Gump Worsley. Talk to us.
Yeah, well, I was a very little kid. My old man was a Ranger fan from the 30s. He didn't miss a game except for World War II until he passed away in the 70s. That's how nutty he was. And just to give you one funny joke, my mother met my father in Hell's Kitchen in New York, where the old garden was, where they both grew up, in July of 1940. So my poor mother waited 54 years for a Stanley Cup.
Wow.
But in any event, Gump Worsley, when he was on the Rangers, and the Rangers were horrifically bad, and this is more from my father than my recollection. I was so small, but it was like a shooting gallery every night. 40 shots a night were not uncommon for Gump Worsley as a Ranger. And then, poof, he got traded to the Canadiens, where not only did he win 4 Stanley Cups, he went from a shooting gallery guy to a Hall of Famer, literally. Gump Worsley's in the Hall of Fame. He got the name Gump because there was a cartoon character in Canada named Andy Gump, and his friends, when he was little, thought he reminded them of Andy Gump, so that's how he became the Gumper. And here's a good tidbit for you. He was the last goalie to not wear a mask. And when they asked him why, this is after Jacques Plante got hit in the face with an Andy Bathgate shot. I will say this, going way back to the 30s and 40s and 50s, my dad told me that there was an unwritten rule in the NHL that you didn't shoot above the crossbar. And that kind of worked until the slap shot came into play.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And the slap shot came into play, boom, boom, Jeffrey on, Andy Bathgate, in the late 50s. And Andy Bathgate, on a backhand, hit Jacques Plante in the face. He got 21 stitches at Madison Square Garden and then came out and told Blake, the legendary coach, I'm not playing unless I wear a mask. And so he wore a mask. And then after that, told Blake wanted him to take it off. And he said, no, I'm not playing unless I wear a mask. and that changed everything. But Gump Worsley refused to wear a mask, and when they asked him, he goes, my face is my mask. That's how nutty these goalies were. So he retired not wearing a mask, but he was the last guy, maybe the dumbest guy, but he was the last guy to not wear a mask in the NHL as a goaltender.
That's unbelievable how he would decline to wear a mask. And what were they thinking anyway? I mean, how is that there was no regulation? There was no, you know, football players wore helmets back then. Maybe they were leather, but at least they wore some protection for their heads.
No, you're right. Again, I think, according to my dad, there was an unwritten rule. You didn't shoot above the crossbar. You could do that. I don't know how they couldn't, like, block a shot, as we see all the time. A guy puts a stick as you're taking a shot, and it goes up in the air. I mean, it goes out of the rink.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but I know way back, I think it was in, I want to say 1928, when the Rangers won their first cup. You know that legendary story where the goalie got hit, Lawrence Chabot got hit in the face and had to come out of the game. And in the old days, you couldn't carry a second goalie. But if there was a goalie in the stands, you could ask the other team if you could use that goalie. And there were two goalies in the stands that day. And the Montreal Maroons, I think it was, said no. And so Lester Patrick, the 43-year-old, that's that legendary 43-year-old coach, donned the pads, and the Rangers won in overtime. Then they got another goalie and won the Stanley Cup. So it did happen. Where, well, my point is, a goalie got hit in the face and had to come out of the game, and they didn't carry, again, two goalies back then. But that's what happened to Jacques Plante. He came, they actually delayed the game while he got 21 stitches, if you can believe that. And he came back in the game with wearing a mask. It sounds crazy to us. I totally agree with that. But again, if there was this unwritten rule, and if you watch some really old, the difference in hockey now and then to me is the athleticism and physicality. The game back then looks so slow when you watch it now. Other than guys like, you know, Bobby Orr, if you see Bobby Orr videos, you're like, oh my goodness, this guy should be playing now,
yeah,
not then.
Right.
And that's why he was so great, of course. But again, maybe there was that gentleman's rule. These guys were all stand-up goalies. You know, there were no floppers. I think like Ken Dryden or Glenn Hall or those guys were the first floppers, they called them. Now we call them butterfly goalies, right? If, yeah. I don't even know if they call them butterfly anymore.
Right.
But yeah, there was a lot of changes going on. I kind of understand it, but again, looking at it now, today, these guys had to be out of their minds.
Out of their minds. Hey, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you checking in. I'll be texting you later during the Flyers game, and again, we'll catch you next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.